Hello and welcome once again to the Wrestling Arena. I'm your host Paul Barrow, and on today's show I'll be giving you my thoughts on WrestleMania Night 2 and the Raw after WrestleMania and AEW's use of CCTV footage and the SmackDown after WrestleMania. So there's overall thoughts going on. I'm not going to be going segment by segment through Raw, for example, but I will touch on the big things that happened. I do apologise because I did say I was going to come in on Tuesday to talk about Night 2, and I got to Tuesday and I'd stayed up to watch Raw Live and I was just totally burnt out. I could not have done the show and made it any good. I would have just been like, yeah, this stuff happened, and it would not have been good. And obviously, because it's WrestleMania, I don't want to just come in and brush you guys off with like, this stuff happened, blah, 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 blah. I want to come out and tell you when it was good, what was bad, all that kind of thing. But after Monday, I was just like, yeah, I can't wait to talk about it. And then the next day, I was exhausted. I have no idea how people do it. Try and keep up with everything. I mean, there were people out there that have covered all the GCW stuff as well, and I'm just like, I couldn't do that. There's not enough hours in the day. I love professional wrestling, but if I'm going to talk about it, I want to be able to sit here with you guys and tell you guys, like, you know, what I thought, rather than just having it be a hodgepodge of, oh, yeah, it was all good, or yeah, it was all bad. I want to... So I do apologise for saying I come on Tuesday and then leaving it till the traditional Sunday time slot. In the chat room, we've got Mr. Priceless and Eddie Hickey. And welcome, guys. It's nice to see you guys here. Fran the Cannon just popped up. I'm just here to talk about... This is going to feel a little bit late because obviously WrestleMania was now a week ago. But on the other hand... It's WrestleMania, and obviously you want to know what I thought about it, because I'm me. but I'm here to talk about everything like that, what I consider to be possibly one of the biggest mistakes AEW has ever made, not to, you know, put the cart before the horse and spoil things, but I will let you guys know all of that. I talk about SmackDown, and I will give you... It's been very light on what I would actually call news stories this week. Most of the news sites seem to be kind of living off interviews they managed to do over WrestleMania weekend. And it's like, well, you don't need to hear that, you know, so-and-so got an interview and they said nothing. It's ridiculous. But, I was very disappointed in myself for not being able to do Tuesday, but I would have just been like, oh. Yeah, guys, I'm very tired. But I'm here now. You're obviously here too, and thank you very much. But I suppose, with that being said, I better get on to the news. So, the first piece of news I have is that I'm going to butcher this name. I'm going to try it. Dan Ventrell, EVP of talent, is out from WWE after a year and a half with the company. Ventrell was seemingly not adored by talent on a professional level, as we've heard several pointing the finger at him as a reason while many deals have nearly reached expiration. We're told that he was actively discussing several new deals at the time of his return, but several within the industry didn't feel as if he was appropriate fit in the position he was in, negotiating deals with talent. In recent months, it's been reported that Drew McIntyre, Becky Lynch, Seth Rollins, Finn Balor, and others have their deals coming up much sooner than would typically be the case before negotiation. In addition, we're told that Natalya's WWE deal is also up within the next couple of months, and talks have not taken place between the two sides. Natalya is the company's longest tenured female wrestler. Now, I've not heard of this guy. I have not heard of this guy as EVP of talent. Obviously, the guy that was in charge of talent that I I knew of before this was John Laurinaitis, and he became an honorary character and that kind of thing. But it has been very weird that lately, these people haven't been tied up. You know, there is another company out there these days. It is getting to the point where, you know, if they wanted to, they could seek employment elsewhere. And for years before then, that wasn't the case. WWE was the only game in town. And I thought it was very weird to let them get this close to expiration. That being said, now that WWE is run by TKO, I think that they tend to let their contracts get very close. At least the UFC do, and I know they're kind of a joint thing at the moment. So maybe this is just a new way of doing things. Personally, I'd like to think that, you know, most of these people will have re-signed. Drew McIntyre, I believe, will have re-signed. He is currently saying he has not. But he's got a program coming up. He's got an event in his home country coming up. Becky Lynch has pretty much said she's WWE till she retires. And then immediately in the same interview tried to be like, yeah, but we'll see. But she made a very declarative statement that she was probably going to remain with WWE until she retired. It was a very weird thing to say. And Seth Rollins has pretty much been a company guy since he started. He's been very, very outspoken on how, you know, why would you go anywhere else? WWE is the big time. Finn Balor? Finn is the one I could see possibly leaving. I do think that even he has sat there and thought, I could have been better used. It's really it's very strange to think these are big names. This isn't like not to throw anybody under the bus, but it isn't like Akira Tozawa is waiting to see if his contract is coming up, or you know, other people of that kind of ilk, or Otis, or, and not that there's anything wrong with those guys. It's just that these guys are people you've used to draw money and put in main events. So to think that they're waiting to see what's going to happen with their deals, I do wonder if they're going to get lowballed. I know that's what I would say. By lowballed, I mean offered much less than they're worth, and the company think they'll take it because of who the company are. I know that used to happen with UFC a little bit. I'm not sure if it still does. It's been a while since I followed MMA in any serious way. But that could be disastrous for WWE to, if they do try and play games with, like, oh, we'll offer you this much, and there's another company that are paying a lot of money for talent, then it could be disastrous for them. Robert Dinkins in the chat: I love AEW, but they should not hire any more ex-WWE talent. Robert Dinkins is a huge AEW fan. And I can agree with you there. They've certainly got something. You do not want to turn into the place XWE talent just turn up like the Impact Zone was a few years ago. That being said, these are some huge names. It would be tempting. I could see why it would be tempting. Like I said, it's not like they're hiring people that have never drawn any money for the other company. But yeah, they've got rid of their EVP of talent, and I hope they're getting someone in quick to look after these contracts. Next piece of news: Cody Rhodes sets WrestleMania merch record. Spoilers for WrestleMania. Cody Rhodes finished his story and set some records along the way. WrestleMania Extra Large, XL, sorry, which is 40, saw Cody Rhodes win the WWE Championship over Roman Reigns, avenging his WrestleMania 39 loss. However, he bettered another WrestleMania 39 performance along the way. An internal WWE memo went out to several members of WWE stating that between WWE World and Shop, and WWE World is now the new name for Access, Cody Rhodes sold over $1 million in merchandise throughout WrestleMania weekend. it was noted that he broke his WrestleMania weekend record from last year. Cody Rhodes recently signed a new WWE contract that will take him past the age of 40. Yeah, I mean, a million in a weekend. I don't know how many guys here went to Clash in the Castle, but I always looked at the merchandise store there and thought, this is crazy. I cannot imagine what WrestleMania is like, because the lines in our little merchandise store were huge. And Mania must be insane. Eddie Hickey, I'm surprised you overtook R-Truth. It's very, very, very... But, like, yeah, Cody... Cody's the... It's... WWE finally have, to my mind, the babyface they've always wanted. Because as of now, and I will say as of now, nobody is booing Cody Rhodes. And that hasn't been the case for a guy they wanted to treat like the top guy since Austin and The Rock. Like, you had maybe Batista. I don't think people booed Batista. People did certainly boo John Cena. People booed Roman Reigns for a long time. Like, people didn't boo Bryan Danielson, Daniel Bryan, but the company never wanted to treat him as the top guy. He got what I call the Kane run with the championship, where you got the championship, but your first feud was against Kane. They did the same thing with Chris Benoit. I'm loath to say his name, but, you know, it was always like, you are the champion, but we're still going to treat you like a mid-card person. Your first feud is going to be against the guy we stick into matches when we don't really have any plans. But this is very much, you know, they finally got a guy. Cody Rhodes is the man as far as WWE are concerned. And speaking of someone being the man, in our final piece of news, and I say that loosely, John Moxley has become the IWGP champion. Moxley's defeated Tetsuya Naito at New Japan Pro Wrestling Windy City Riot to become the new champion. The match had been booked for the event for several months, but was only made into a championship bout after Naito successfully defended the title at the Secure Genesis event. Highlights were shown on the April 13th edition of AEW Collision. So he's down. John Moxley is the first person in history, I saw this bandied around, to be WWE champion, AEW champion, and New Japan Pro Wrestling champion, IWGP champion. And when I first saw that, I was like, wow, that's really impressive. And it still is, don't get me wrong. But then you've got to think that, like, AEW hasn't been around all that long. And I can only imagine that more people are probably going to join that list. But he's always going to be, the first. Mr. Priceless, not even a week without the Shield members holding gold. That is true. Obviously, he's going to appear on Dynamite this week. They've been hyping that. Has WWE been around longer than New Japan Pro Wrestling? I do not believe WWE has not. I'm not sure how long the Worldwide Wrestling Federation, which would be still WWE. I do not believe so. It's possible. I can't remember the exact lineage of New Japan, because it grew from one wrestler dying and his two proteges coming off to create Ricky Dozan dying and his two proteges coming off to create their own companies. I cannot remember. WWE's roots began in 1963. I think they might be a little younger than that. Let me look that up, because now I mean, tell you what then, WWE are technically older, because New Japan as it is now was founded in 1972. Yeah, And see the Capital Wrestling, which was the name it was before WWWF, according to Mr. Priceless, was 1953. I used to know all these dates. I really did. But it just becomes a bit much because they tend to morph from one into the other without a significant break. So at some point, WCW were claiming that their world title had roots back to Carl Gotch and George Hackenschmidt. Now, it wasn't true, but in a certain way, you could take that lineage back. So records and numbers and all that kind of thing in wrestling are always a little bit of a crazy thing to talk about. But yes, technically, WWF is older than New Japan. I should have known because New Japan Pro Wrestling, their website is newjapan1972.com. I should have remembered that. And the WWF became WWF in 1979, according to Robert Dinkins. So it's very crazy. Wrestling has been going some time. But as we say, John Moxley has become the IWGP champion, the first to become the champion of all three major promotions. This kind of thing always reminds me of when people were like, oh, The Rock has been WCW champion. It's like, yeah, but WCW at the time was owned by WWF. Like, let's not mess about. It's kind of a hodgepodge of stuff. Like, I'm pleased for Moxley. He must be on top of the world right now because he gets to do whatever he wants to do, and he's now held a belt that I know, at least from his autobiography, I know that he holds Japanese wrestling in high esteem. And it's called Mox. It's a fun autobiography. You can definitely feel his voice throughout all of it. It does not feel like it was written by a ghostwriter after, you know, talking to the guy for 10 hours or whatever. It honestly feels like he wrote it, and I believe he did. So, yeah, that is, surprisingly, that is really the news, because other stuff is stuff that happened on TV shows, and I'm going to talk about during my thoughts. So the first thing I really need to cover, obviously, is WrestleMania Night 2. And WrestleMania Night 2 opened up with first match is Seth Rollins versus Drew McIntyre for the World Heavyweight Championship. Now, I was surprised this opened the show. I really was. And I thought this was a good match. I was pleased to see that Drew got himself some good wrestling attire, because the airline he used lost his bags and lost all his attire. So someone, one of the seamstresses had to work like overnight pretty much to make sure. Oh, yeah, Mr. Price is bringing up something before we get to the match. Stephanie McMahon came out to kind of open up the show, and I was quite shocked. I was quite shocked to one, see her, and two, hear her announced as Stephanie McMahon. I would have thought they would have taken this opportunity to start calling her Stephanie Levesque. Now, I'm not sure what her married name is. Maybe she did keep the McMahon name, but I would be desperate to try and get away from that as much as I could. And the WWE seemed like mentioning the name Vince McMahon is one of the few things they are now like, do not do that. With understandable reasons, obviously. You know, she came out, she got a good reaction. That was nice to see. You got to hope that nothing comes out in this suit now where people find out that she may have known things, she may not have known things. I have to think that they've looked into that and pretty much made up their mind that she was unaware of stuff. Yeah, Eddie Hickey, or they could have just referred to her as Stephanie. Fran the Cannon, Stephanie Hurst Helmsley. That'd be pretty fun, actually. I would laugh my backside off at that. Then we had the entrances for Drew and Seth, and Drew came out with the Mama's Parade, which I think is a New Year's thing. And they're all dressed up in, to be honest, I do not like this Seth Rollins character. Seth himself seems fine, he seems cool, he's a good wrestler. But this whole ridiculous outfit thing, it just doesn't do anything for me other than make me go, the guy looks like a Burke. Fran the Cannon, Adam Rose's entourage has aged badly. I mean, that's what it looked like. Everyone was, it reminded me of one of the entrances from WrestleMania 30 with the New Orleans kind of parade with all the people with big heads and stuff. The problem is, they were coming out in crazy outfits and stuff, and that was cool. But when Seth comes out and he's in a crazy outfit, you're like, yeah, well, that's just Seth. That's not a special WrestleMania thing. It didn't work for me. But then again, nothing he wears works for me. I kind of, not that I want to see him go back to like the Architect or the bootlicker that was in the Authority. I just, it's not something that's grabbing me. I heard someone say that he's trying to be this generation's Macho Man. I could see that being the reason he's doing this. But Macho, as over the top as he got, it worked for him. And this, he never looked stupid. He just looked like Macho Man. And to me, sometimes Seth can look real dumb. That being said, as I said earlier, Drew McIntyre came out and there was loads of people holding swords. It was pretty cool. I liked the match. I thought the match was pretty good. I did feel that the Claymore was kind of overused, considering how many times they were going to kick out of it. But it was pretty fun because it was like a WWE 2K24 match where you've just set unlimited finishes and that kind of thing. I know you didn't do that in the new games. You used to be able to do it in SmackDown versus Raw. You could set yourself as having unlimited finishes or 5 finishes. And it felt like Goldberg versus Brock, where they were just constantly hitting finishes, which is cool and fine. But I think they went one or two too many with the Claymore. I thought that move had been pretty well protected. They started with the Claymore. Now, that would have been a really cool finish. A really cool... hits him with the Claymore and immediately pins him for 3. Because you could then play off of, like, shouldn't have gone into that tag match with the Bloodline. That's exactly what Drew said. He said you were going to burn out, and you did, and you got caught. But I think the Claymore was kicked out for about 3-4 times, and I think that's one too many. That being said, Drew did win. And Drew won. And obviously, CM Punk was on commentary for this match. I didn't feel like he was that good. He's, in the past, he's been very good on commentary. But because it was the first match, you had a... Everyone was trying to settle in. Everyone's introducing each other. Everyone's talking about the weather, how good WrestleMania was going to be, how they, welcome back to WrestleMania Night 2. And Punk never really got out of the starting blocks. They did make up for it, though, because after the match, Drew got emotional. And I think that was as close to real as you're going to get, because the crowd were with him. The crowd were chanting, "You deserve it," and all this kind of thing, and he was holding the belt. And I was like, okay, they may unintentionally turn Drew face here. And then Drew got into CM Punk's face. And Punk, to his credit, was sort of like, I don't know what you're yelling at me for. This shouldn't be about me. This should be about you. I can't even really hear what you're saying. I've got these headphones on. And then it was all it was. I could tell something was going to happen because the match went on for the aftermath of the match went on a bit longer than you expect. And Drew is taunting Punk till eventually Punk's had too much. He sweeps the leg out from McIntyre, beats him down with his corrective piece of equipment for his arm. And then we had the second time ever a cash-in. And Drew lost the World Heavyweight Championship to Damian Priest. I think this is a great idea because all the way through the build-up to this, you've had Drew saying, "You're too distracted, Seth. I'm going to take advantage of that. Your mind's not where it needs to be. You need to be at your top to face me. I'm not having any excuses for you not being at your best." And in the end, it's Drew's own hubris that got him, that lost him this title. He won't see it that way because Drew McIntyre likes to see it as the world being against him. But this is obviously setting up Drew McIntyre versus Punk. Punk has already said that he is probably in a better physical condition than people realise. So I'm actually expecting this to possibly be at Clash in the Castle 2. Not something I'd do, because you're going to get Punk booed. But it's looking like that might be the plan. In the chat, we have Fran the Cannon. I didn't get a booking credit for this. Gave them this last Sunday. Indeed, you did. I thought about that. David Walker, which is Sethy, sorry. Drew versus Priest in Scotland. Drew to get ICW back up to counter Judgment Day. To be fair, ICW have had a presence on the WWE network. Whether or not WWE would consider them big enough to make a kind of splash on a pay-per-view, I can't see. It'd be fun. It'd be fun. I hope that Priest keeps it a while, to be honest. I think he deserves it. I think he's a good hand in the ring. I think if he loses it now, it might be difficult to take him seriously. Because the Judgment Day have been sort of an up and down thing. It's like, sometimes they used as comedy, sometimes they used as a legitimate threat. It's a very weird, it's a delicate balancing act, and I think that Priest is very good. I'll always go back to that Bad Bunny match in Puerto Rico for Backlash last year. And I thought he did an extremely good job. And obviously, Bad Bunny pulled his weight. I'm not going to say that it was all, but they've got to trust the guy to put him in there with a celebrity who doesn't really know what they're doing. My hope is that he gets a respectable reign with that title. It's a very strange thing. Then we went on to The Pride, which is a thing the internet seemed to have come up with. The Pride, which is the Street Profits and Bobby Lashley versus The Final Testament, which is Officer Payne, and I'm going to forget the guy's name. The guy that was dead the moment Vince put bondage gear on him. Well, I can't think of his name right now. Karrion Kross, thank you, Sethy. I can never remember his name. I just remember that look. Sometimes that first impression can kill you. But before the match started, they brought out Snoop Dogg, who was hyping up his new drink, gin and juice, that he's producing with Dr. Dre. Seth, calling what Karrion Kross was wearing a Demolition ripoff is an insult to Demolition. It was a super shredder. So it was a Kevin Nash ripoff, if you want to go that far. But so we had Snoop Dogg come out for guest commentary. And then we had Bubba Ray Dudley come out. And that's when I realised what this match was going to be. And I'm not the biggest fan of some of Bubba Ray's takes, because he swings from one way to the other massively. He'll love one company and hate the other, and then he'll go back and hate one company and love the other. It's very, like, he's been very critical of both companies, which is fine, but sometimes I'm busted open. Their kind of takes can be a lot one way or the other. It's very strange. So we have, it was going to be a street fight. I think it was just called a street fight, or it had some silly name that just meant a no DQ match. And Fran the Cannon, Bubba only cares about what's good for Bubba, which is fine, but like, don't peddle yourself as some paragon of wrestling. I don't mind him. It's just that sometimes it goes too far. Robert Dinkins, Bubba Ray was rewarded for his hatred of AEW. He has certainly been much further on the WWE side of things for a while now. It was a Philly street fight. Sethy says, that's the kind of thing you put as a main event of SmackDown. You know, it's a miracle on 34th street fight around Christmas, or it's a whatever street fight. So I'll just call it a street fight or a mania brawl or something. But this was fun. This had a few fun spots. They did the basically, about halfway through the match, Karrion Kross insisted that there was a three count when there wasn't. Bubba Ray got really tough and took his Dudley Boy glasses out. Large pop from the crowd. They did the what's up spot. It was fun. To be honest, it was nothing memorable. It was fun, but it was not something where I was like, oh my God, that's going to be something I'm going to remember for ages. Just a bit of ECW-esque nostalgia. So you found the canon? Philly, home of ECW, so of course they'd name the street fight. Then why not call it an extreme, an ECW street fight? You own ECW. And in that case, mind you, Sabu was busy on the weekend. He was appearing for the Indie Hall of Fame. He was their big headliner for the Independent Wrestling Hall of Fame, and he didn't show up, apparently. An extreme street fight, yeah. I always think naming it after the town they're in is just weird. Like, with Philly, it makes sense. Like, they are the city that booed Santa Claus. They are one of the original heel cities. Like, the heels are always cheered, the baby faces are always booed. But it was decent. I got more about it than I expected to. Then, if I remember correctly, was it LA Knight versus AJ Styles then? Fran the Cannon, didn't he also keep the money after no showing? I haven't heard much. I heard he didn't show, and it wouldn't surprise me if he kept the money for no showing. But they were using him big as a kind of headliner for their Hall of Fame, and it hasn't been going that long, the Independent Wrestling Hall of Fame. Give me a sec. I'm going to check the match order. Yes, this is the way I thought about it. So it is AJ Knight, LA Knight, AJ Knight versus LA Styles, I was going to say. I've got a list, but I'm well aware that I've just realised they're in the wrong order because Io Sky and Bayley was not the second match on the card. So it's LA Knight versus AJ Styles. Again, AJ having his run of good, not great WrestleMania matches. Like, it was not a bad match. The guys went hard. LA Knight still over. I do think the appearance of the actual Rock has affected LA Knight's popularity because people have always said, oh, he's more like a Rock tribute act and that kind of thing. And while I dispute that, there are similarities where you're like, oh, yeah, there are similarities to The Rock, which is fine when The Rock isn't there. But when The Rock is there, it's just, what are we doing? You know, that being said, The Rock is not going to be around. So LA Knight, hopefully, will be able to pick up his stuff. I thought this match was fine. I don't really remember much about it, to be honest. I always hope for AJ to have that kind of amazing WrestleMania match. And to me, he never has. Say what you will about the Boneyard match, but it's not a match, despite being called a match. It's a spectacle. It's a confrontation. It's a fight. And that, it was a great deal of fun, but it wasn't a match. He's never had that kind of blow away, oh my God, AJ Styles match. He's already talking about, you know, it's coming close to me hanging it up. I just love to, he didn't win this match. He's never won at Mania. I don't believe, no, he got low blowed by Nakamura. I thought this was perfectly fine. They did a segment where they showed who won the Slim Jim's car. And it was nothing against the person. It's a middle-aged lady, perfectly fine. But you can tell that they thought this was going to be a thing for young people. For, like, you know, they had an entire section of people just chewing on Slim Jims with Slim Jim signs, wearing Slim Jim t-shirts, and they were all young. There was no, like, ordinary person in there. It was just kind of like, yeah, this is it. You're expecting someone in their early 20s to walk out of here with a dumb car. And to be fair, Seth, you're right. LA Knight did need the win more than Styles. I'm just a bit gutted that Styles is never going to get a win because he does seem to be wrapping it up. It's a bit of a difficult one for someone I consider to be one of the best to have been going for, like, the last two decades. Like, he carried TNA for years. I can't believe they're low blow. If they hadn't lowballed him, he'd still be there. But LA Knight did need it. He needs to try and continue this rise. Then we had Logan Paul versus Randy Orton versus Kevin Owens. Thought this match was great. Thought this match was really good because it played into several things. It played into Kevin Owens' gimmick of, I watch wrestling, or I have watched wrestling, so I know all of the things that happen in wrestling. Like, if Kevin Owens is in a room with a cake, he'll tell you he knows someone's going into the cake because it's wrestling and he's watched wrestling. And Logan Paul comes out and this prime bottle comes out with him. And I'm like, okay, who's the prime bottle? And rather amusingly, I forgot to mention this on my night one. I think I didn't mention it. They had outside the ring at all times the prime hydration station, which is just a cart full of prime. Now, I don't know if you guys have been keeping an eye on Prime here in the UK, at least, but it's gone from being like £3 a bottle, which is expensive for a for what is basically flavoured water, and now it's started to appear in like clearance stuff. So I've seen baskets of it for 30p a bottle. Now, whether or not that stuff's coming up on its expiration date. Funny to think of water having an expiration date, but there you go. But the ring had the prime bottle on it. The turnbuckles had the prime bottle on it. We had this ridiculous cart, which I expected to be used as a weapon at every opportunity, and it wasn't. And obviously had this walking prime bottle. So Logan Paul drops out of the ring and says to the other two, "Are you guys start fighting?" And they just didn't. They wanted to fight Logan Paul. They wanted to hurt Logan Paul. And it was a fun match because every trope—that's the word I was trying to think of earlier—every trope of a three-way happened where it's like. One of them goes for the pin and the other one breaks it up and they go, "Well, we know only one person can win. Are we gonna fight now?" "Oh no, we're not gonna fight now, don't worry about it." And then Randy Orton immediately goes for an RKO, which Kevin Owens blocks. And they just kinda look at each other and go like, "I guess we've got a fight." It's not like they weren't angry at each other. It was more like, "You're my mate, I'm your mate, but we know we've got a fight now. So let's get it over and done with." It was really fun. Speaking of Prime, Fran the Cannon, not seen it that cheap, but it's certainly gone from being scarce and selling out to being available everywhere. Eddie Hickey, Prime sucks. It's not even good. Okay, I haven't. It was. It seemed like the two Randy Orton and Kevin Owens. I'm going to keep doing this. Apparently, were just having fun. It was like they got into the and eventually the Prime bottle. Was unmasked as I Show Speed, who, being a 41-year-old man, I've never heard of, right? And I get it, it's not for me. But he was cussing up a storm, and Randy let him have it. I think Randy was, let's say, not as light as he could have been. I think he looked at the guy and went, "This guy won't stop swearing. We're not supposed to swear." And Randy beat him up. Now, it's been two WrestleManias in a row where this has happened, where it's been KSI and now I Show Speed. My hope is that next year, Prime Bottle comes out, the babyface goes to the Prime Bottle, and tries to batter it, and then the prime bottle comes off, and it's, I don't know, someone, a wrestler, like someone from NXT, who just batters the guy trying to win, and that's how Logan Paul wins his match. I think it'd be a fun misdirect to think, oh, this is just going to be another streamer, or it's going to be a YouTube guy, or it's going to be, you know, just one of his hangers-on. And it turns out it's just a monster wrestler, and they destroy Logan's opponent. I think that's the way you go with this. I think it's a nice. You still get your sponsorship in there with Prime, and I think that's the way to go. I mean, I don't know if Prime's going to last much longer anyway, because. As I said, it's not selling like it used to. But I could see that being a thing they do. Logan managing to squeak out a victory here because people just getting in their own way. And Logan is still your US champion. crazy kind of. It was a fun match. It was a fun match, and I'm happy. To be honest, I'm happy Logan Paul won. That title really adds to his presentation. That kind of I'm a spoiled rich guy who's on YouTube, but I've got this prestigious belt and nobody can seem to get it off me. I think it works for him. The reason I'm thinking that like Prime might not be sticking around is like they'll go out of their way to tell you that Logan Paul and KSI are like owners of that thing. They own in total about 30 or 40%, I think. So they're not really owners. So imagine if everyone else backs out of it, then what are they going to do? But that match I thought was pretty good. It was quite fast-paced. Very much fun. We've got Eddie Hickey. He really makes me cringe when he thinks the crowd appreciates him. I do think the crowd appreciate him as a heel. He is just a heel. He's getting it. It's just really annoying. Because I've got people who do not watch professional wrestling who on the night of WrestleMania were just messaging me like, you know Logan Paul is in wrestling? And I'm like, yeah. He's like, how much is he in wrestling? I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, has he got like an action figure? I'm like, yeah, he's got an action figure. He's in the video game. He's signed a contract with them. And the guy's just like, that's really weird. And it is really weird. But, you know, he's not doing boxing anymore, thank God. His brother still is. He's fighting Tyson soon. I say fighting, but we'll see how that goes. But yeah, sorry, I'd keep going on about stuff now. But that three-way, I thought was one of the better matches of the evening. There are Eddie Hickey telling him to check wrestling out. There are some people, believe me, who no matter what you say, will never get it, and that's fine. I've spent much of my youth being like, I should check this out. They're never going to get past the place of what wrestling is. You can tell them. You know, that you get the old, I don't, you know, it's all fake. I'm like, so's every movie you've ever watched. And that's just kind of it. So there are some people who are just never going to get there. And it's best not to bash them over the head with, like, I should do this, you should watch this. Because they're just going to double down and never watching it. Mr. Priceless, Logan's a top shithouse. Keep saying it. He's bloody good at this wrestling thing. Exactly. He's really good. He's really good. And fair play to him if he's going to continue doing this. Next we had, for the WWE Women's Championship, Io Sky versus Bayley. A match that I think I would have liked to have seen headline night one. I've said it before, I think it would have been a great thing to open with that huge tag match for night one. It's possible you could have burnt the crowd out. I'll admit that. But you could use it as The Rock saying, well, I'm going to give the Tribal Chief all the time he needs to recover for night two. But I'm just sad that Bayley has not got her main event. All the other horsewomen have got their main event. You know what I mean? And I think Bayley's better than two of them. I think Charlotte is better in ring, and Bayley's got a better character work. But I thought this was a good match. Again, I thought this was good. One of the better technical matches. But the main thing coming out of this match, Bayley's entrance was weird because apparently she wanted Paramore to play her out, and that fell through. So they made this weird kind of Egyptian thing. It looked like the boys, former AEW talent, were kind of carrying her to the ring. It was really strange. And they only really carried her out to the stage, and then they just did a regular entrance. I hope she gets something better than that for sometime soon. Because she did come out on top. Unfortunately, the thing that this match is going to be known for is Mark Henry going crazy. Because I'm busted up on radio. Mark Henry was like, I can't believe Kyrie. I think it was Kyrie saying or Io Sky. I can't remember which one of them. They were basically in the ring for like a few seconds while Bayley was trying to get her moment in the middle. But Fran the Cannon. Wouldn't they get a WWE rename? The Lads. That'd be an NXT UK name, that would. But yeah, the big thing that came out of it was Mark Henry complaining that one of the heels was in the ring while Bayley was doing the whole like pose for the camera deal, and I don't understand why he got mad about it. I don't understand why that's the thing. Oh God, was that from the previous night? It was. I apologise. Yes, it was. It was for the 6-1 tag. Oh, so like I said, too much wrestling over too short amount of time for me to remember everything. Well, in that case, this match. Yeah, to say Bayley did come. Yeah, I apologise, everyone. Like I said, it's been nearly a week since the event, and what I remember. Oh God, I'm not going to live that one down, am I? Yeah, that was for the 6-1 tag. Oh, God. Anyway, let me get back. I thought the match itself was good. I enjoyed the match. One of the people carrying Bayley out was apparently AJ Kirsch. That's awesome. So he's been at a Mania. That's an awesome thing to hear. I've got AJ on like quite a lot of my socials, and I hadn't seen. Usually post stuff on Instagram once he's done stuff, I hadn't seen anything. But as I said, I've not been avoiding wrestling. It's just been hard to take everything in. I thought this match was good. Unfortunately, to my mind, the result was like a foregone conclusion. I did think at one point that Bayley had hurt her knee. Hasn't quite that she has. So maybe she's just really good at selling. But I thought she'd hurt her knee, and I thought it's typical that she's going to win the title and then have to give it up because she's hurt. But it was fun. It was fast-paced. It was one of the better like wrestling matches, because like the Pride versus the Final Testament was a street fight. Logan put LA Knight and AJ Styles is more of a brawl. Seth Rollins versus Drew McIntyre, as I say, was a finisher spamming match. So this was like slowed down. It was a wrestling match, and I really appreciated that. And then we move on to the main event of the evening, contested under Bloodline rules. Roman Reigns, the undisputed WWE Universal Champion, versus Cody Rhodes, the big one. I believe the entrances themselves took around 23 minutes. Or some silly amount of time. But they were both really cool. I couldn't stand the ridiculous mask that Cody was wearing. I thought it made him look quite the dork. But the quiet entrance for Roman was awesome. It really made him feel like a big deal, because he is a big deal, and beating him should be a big deal. I did not think that this was as good a match as last year. I really didn't. I have one major problem with the match, in that they had a wrestling match, and then stuff happened. Because it was a wrestling match, then members of the Bloodline would come out. So, like, Jimmy Uso would come out, and then Jey Uso would come out to spear him, to stop him interfering. They took a nice bump off the runway on the outside. Then we had Solo Sikoa come out, and John Cena, the last person he's ever beaten, come out and take Solo out. And then The Rock came out. And then the lights went out. And the lights came back on. And Undertaker chokeslammed The Rock. Two problems. One, that spot was blatantly there for Steve Austin. And they just couldn't come to monetary terms. That's fine. Understandable. And obviously, you can say Undertaker, WrestleMania, they're intimately linked. It's Mr. Priceless. I did like the staggered run-ins. Not everything all at one big swoop. I liked the staggered run-ins. They did this backwards. Because they had the bulk of a wrestling match. Oh, yeah. And, sorry, I nearly forgot. Then we had the Shield music hit. And Seth Rollins, who, bless him, dyed his hair and got dressed up in his Shield outfit, came out of the chair and got absolutely smashed by Roman in a recreation of Seth's heel turn back in the day. For a moment, I thought maybe Moxley's coming in, because why on earth are they playing the Shield music? For a moment, because that's ridiculous. They wouldn't do that. The two companies aren't exactly on the best of terms. But it was it was really weird, because all weekend Seth's been made to look a bit of an idiot. He's lost his title. He helped lose the tag match, and his running was a distraction. But to my mind, they needed to reverse it. All this staggered running stuff should have happened right near the start. It should have been, oh, it's the start of the match, and here comes Jimmy immediately, because it's bloodline rules, they can do this. And he's immediately stopped. And you do all those run-ins, and all the bloodline get taken out immediately, so it just becomes Cody versus Roman. As it was, the run-ins were really cool, but the ending to me needed to go a bit longer to justify, like, because they must have had it felt like they had a bit of a rest between their kind of portion of the match and the pin. So I just felt it wasn't bad. I really enjoyed it. I just wish it had been flipped around so the run-ins were at the start. And they'd all, you know, the crowd would be going crazy. They've all been taken out. And now it's time for the one-on-one. Call me a old man shouts a cloud. I just wish it had been, oh, all his advantages are gone, because he was stupid enough to say anything goes. And he forgot to think that, like, if anything goes, then anyone can interfere, not just my guys. I mean, yeah, Mr. Price is right. He is 10 years of long-term storytelling. And Roman basically failed because he couldn't help but hit Seth. He can't get that whole Shield betrayal out of his head. The problem with that is they've already done the reconciliation, like, at least once. They're hoping that people forget that. Most people seem to have. But it was a very fun match. The ending was awesome. It reminded me of WrestleMania 10 when everyone came out and put Brett on their shoulders. They did the same thing, but with Cody on the shoulders. And then Cody, like, called out Triple H. He's like, oh, you know, he doesn't want to be called out here, but, you know, Paul Levesque, come on down. And usually when it's like, oh, somebody doesn't want to come out, it takes more coaxing for them to come out. He was like, oh, Paul Levesque, come on down. And immediately the song hit and Triple H power walks his way down to the ring. And I'm like, all right, man, okay, yeah. Between that and every 15 minutes, you guys yelling about the Paul Levesque era, and I get that you want to brand away from Vince McMahon as much as you can, but then the next person he pulls out is Bruce Pritchard, who Ronda Rousey has said, as long as Bruce Pritchard's there, he's just a proxy for Vince McMahon. So, and I'm not saying she's right. And Cody has said that, you know, Bruce Pritchard helped get me back into WWE. So I get it. But if you're trying to get away from Vince McMahon, don't call out to come to the ring and give you a big hug. Someone has been described as his proxy presence. It went for 8. I was really happy that they let this celebration go for a while with him walking around and high-fiving people and hugging. And there was this really sweet moment where someone's like, yo, turn around, will you? Turn around. And he turns around and his mum's there. And it's almost like he forgot she was going to be there, like, legitimately, because he gave, like, a little start. And he got to hand over the belt like he's always said he was going to do. And it was awesome. And I was really happy for him. So I could not wait to watch Monday Night Raw the next night. Now, with Raw after WrestleMania, I think it's become overblown. I mean, there have been years where, you know, there have been huge debuts. I think Goldberg was one of them. But there have been other years where not much has happened. And I would put this on a kind of midpoint. It's like, stuff happened, but nothing that was massively surprising to me. SmackDown was more surprising. But with Raw, we had... the first hour of Raw was commercial free in the US. And I believe 7 minutes of wrestling happened in that first hour. There was a lot of self-congratulation. Triple H came out for the third time. The second time. It's just that when Stephanie came out, who, Fran the Cannon is right, she has been named on documents in the court case. So it is weird they've had her around. But for the third time, Triple H has come out and say, oh, thanks for making this the most profitable WrestleMania, the most... And it's like, yeah, cool. Do that before the cameras start. Put that online. Because you've just taken 15 minutes or 12, 10 minutes to come out and say, yo, thanks for watching the show. You're still watching. And then we've got stuff. And then he brings Cody out. And Cody pretty much gives the same little speech that he gave at the end of Mania. And I'm thinking, okay, this segment's going a little long for me. A little long. Like, it's not bad, but if this was Vince McMahon, it would be getting crucified right now for, yo, where is my wrestling? What are you setting up? What's going on? Not that I'm saying I want Vince back. It's just that, like, all right, be careful of what you're doing. And then we had The Rock come out. And Rock came out and he said, you did what you said you were going to do. You know, not many people know that my father and your father were friends. And I'm sure your father would be very proud of you right now. And I'm not sure my father would be very proud of me. But I don't care. The Rock's got to go away for a bit, he says. But when I come back, I'm coming for you. Interestingly and very smartly, he did not say, I'm coming for the title. He said, I'm coming for Cody Rhodes. They did this awkward thing where The Rock took his People's Championship and he kind of swapped it with Cody so they could both have... It was very strange. He even got a This Is Awkward chant from the crowd. And I just thought this segment went a bit long. The Rock handed Cody something and said, you don't even need to open your hand to know what that is. But don't ever break my heart again. And then The Rock left. Eddie Hickey saying it's probably SummerSlam. I don't think it'll be SummerSlam because I think that's around the time the film is supposed to be finishing filming. So I think this was a plug for next year's WrestleMania. Which I'm not in favour of. I'm not in favour of announcing a big match for next year's WrestleMania the night after this year's WrestleMania. It's just too long for me to try and get involved. Because then you're sitting there, where, well, you can't put Cody in something. He's facing The Rock. And maybe it will be SummerSlam, or maybe it will be Survivor Series. In fact, Survivor Series has some significance for The Rock, being the place where he made his debut. But I'm never in favour of them being like, let's set... they did it with Roxina. They set the match to be the main event of next year's WrestleMania, like the night after the one they just had. And I was like, well, that's not good, because if you come with a good storyline, you've already told people it can't go anywhere because you've already set this match. So I'm pleased they didn't say, I'm coming for you next WrestleMania. They just said, next time I'm around, I'm coming for you, which is cool. And we had appearances from the NXT champions on Raw. They were cool. Eddie Hickey saying that Rock mainly returns to Survivor Series. You'd think so, but a couple of years ago they had a Survivor Series that was a celebration of The Rock, and he never showed up because he was busy. He never even sent a video in. He sent a video in to TNA, or Impact at the time, for their Hall of Fame, because they were putting Ken Shamrock in. But he did not send a video in to WWE, who were dedicating a night, a pay-per-view to him. It was pretty funny. Those were some dark days. But I chuckled mightily when I realised that. But, I've got no problem with them setting up Rock versus Cody. And I'm very pleased they didn't say it's next year's WrestleMania, or it's SummerSlam, or it's... Because he could turn up in 2 weeks on Raw and be like, I'm doing it in it. They could pull that trigger whenever they need to. In theory, they could pull it in December when they start on Netflix. They could just say The Rock's turning up for the first show on Netflix. And it'll, I imagine it will pull some subscribers in. I'm pleased they didn't say when it was going to be. We had the NXT champions show up, as I said. The problem is that's not unexpected at this point. That's not a thing where I'm like, oh, fair enough. They're there, cool. But they're not going to stick around. I thought the Raw after Mania was fun. The crowd were a little burnt out. Hard to blame them after two nights and whatever else they'd seen. Maybe the Hall of Fame, maybe they've gone to a GCW show, maybe they went to... You know, it gets to be a bit much. And the idea of stacking that card with debuts and surprises, I understand why you don't do that, because you don't want to give the best stuff that's going to happen all year in three nights. But I thought Raw was fine. It could have been better. Then I'm going to move on to SmackDown. And I only really want to talk about one thing from SmackDown. And that is that Tama Tonga has turned up as a member of the Bloodline. And yeah, sorry, from the camera, they did want you to know that it's Triple H's era. Yeah, they've been mentioning that all weekend. And they do want you to let you know that the draft is coming up. But they announced that on Impulsive, the Logan Paul podcast, it was going to be a couple of months. On SmackDown, Tama Tonga has arrived, and he's a member of the Bloodline, which now seems like it's going to be led by I've mentioned his name like twice now. Solo Sikoa. Thank you so much, Eddie. Sometimes I wish there was someone else here to be like, yo. Now seems to be led by Solo Sikoa. We've also heard that Jacob Fatu has been signed by WWE. We've been hearing rumours that they were possibly interested him in. I've been saying where he's got, there's some kind of criminal thing going on with him. Maybe they're not going to sign him for that reason, but it does appear that he has signed, and I think we can all see where this is going, because Tama Tonga beat up Jimmy Uso, which will lead to the reformation of the Usos as a team. So you're going to have Solo Sikoa, Tama Tonga, and Jacob Fatu as the new blood, I'd imagine. And they are going to be facing off at some point against the Usos and Roman Reigns when he returns as a big babyface. Hikuleo has his contract ending around June. So maybe he's in there somewhere. Seth is saying it's the rebranding, like when Triple H took over DX. It did remind me of that. But I see a big six man of this new bloodline versus the Usos and Roman Reigns as a huge. Maybe do they keep it going to SummerSlam? That'd be a huge main event for SummerSlam. They need to start giving Solo Sikoa some wins. Paul Heyman will definitely be with Roman Reigns when they. Paul Heyman's already terrified of Solo. He's already scared, and he does a great job of obviously projecting that. But that is the next. I thought the Bloodline story was just going to be over. And I thought, they've managed to sort of keep it moving without rehashing the same stuff. Now we've already got some interesting ideas from the chat. We've got Sethy, as Regal would say, War Games. And Eddie Hickey rightly pointing out that I nearly forgot Solo's name again. I definitely didn't have to look higher up in the chat. Fran the Cannon saying the six-man bloodline. Then it's revealed that The Rock has led the takeover, leading to Rock versus Roman at next WrestleMania. Perfect. Perfect. So yeah, maybe they held this off till Survivor Series, because you get The Rock appearing at Survivor Series to say, this new bloodline is my bloodline. I am the final boss. I am the tribal king or whatever. See, Mr. Price is saying, tribal combat or war games? Listen, it better be war games. War games is better than tribal combat. This is all like the fact they've managed to keep this going, but change it in a way that I find interesting, because I was done with the bloodline. I'll be honest with you, I was done with the bloodline last WrestleMania. I was like, yeah, just get on with it. Now they've managed to keep it ticking over, barely. But I was ready for it to be done. And now they've brought in this new talent and that kind of thing. I think it could be really cool, because it's not just like, oh, it's not interesting unless Roman's there. You know, this Bloodline Civil War could be real interesting. I mean, let's put it this way. Let's say you can't get a Roman for a match, but you want to do a six-man. You could do Tama Tonga, Jacob Fatu, and Solo Sikoa versus Jey Uso, Jimmy Uso, and the Honorary Uso. You could bring Sammy in, and they, you know, obviously they could lose because they don't have Roman, but that could be a cool match for a like middle pay per view between big steps in the story. You could run that back as like, okay, it's an interesting idea. There's lots of different things. It reminds me of the ECW Raven and Tommy Dreamer feud, where like different bits of other feuds can come in to kind of mix it up, and I'm very pleased that that kind of thing's happening. I hope that happens for more stuff, because one thing I have noticed, as much as I am pleased that they didn't immediately say, oh, by the way, next WrestleMania is going to be Cody versus The Rock, they need to set something for Cody up quick, like a big contest, like a big challenge. I think it'd be Gunther, but I'd imagine they'd keep that till Bash in Berlin. So I can't see who the big heel is they'd use. You might want to put him in there against Logan Paul, to be honest, for at least like a month or so. But so the draft is in on next week's SmackDown, which is the 26th. And I'm Raw in 2 weeks on the 29th. Okay, cool. That's cool. Good that they get, because I heard a couple of months. But it should be fun. I'm looking forward to this draft. I'm hoping that it's a nice even split, because it used to be that whoever was on the biggest TV channel would get all the biggest stars, and now they kind of don't need to do that because they're only going to keep Fox and that happy until December. And Mr. Priceless, New Blood, paging Vince Russo, bro, don't you start with me. Yeah, I heard myself say New Blood and I was like, oh God, no. At least they're doing Millionaires Club. But I think the WWE is in a really, really, really good state right now. I think that Bloodline storyline is something they can tick over. They've got a champion that people like for once. Their mid-card titles are... Well, the mid-card titles are a bit of a question mark for me, because I was saying that I didn't want Sami Zayn to win the IC title, because I think that Sami Zayn should be above the IC title by now. He's been in the main events enough where he's proved his worth. And people were saying, well, they don't see the IC title as a step down anymore. And that's fine. I can completely understand that. The problem being, we don't know how the IC title is going to be used and perceived until after Gunther's reign. Now it's on Sammy. Is it still going to be treated as this huge thing? Or is it, we've used it to get Gunther over, and therefore it can go back to being whatever. I hope the first. I really do. I love the IC title. But it's a weird one for me. I hope that they keep it respectable. But I think WWE in a very good place right now. Now, the same, to my mind, can't be said for AEW, unfortunately. This whole thing they've got had going with showing the CCTV footage from All In was a promotional disaster. Like a really big black eye. I get it. I totally understand that, you know, WWE and CM Punk have had their they've had their say on what happened. Right? But to put it on your TV show is a waste of time. People had already made up their mind who was in the right and who was in the wrong in that situation. You were never going to change anyone's mind, because that's how tribal wrestling can be. I feel that it does point out that Punk, you know, didn't tell the total truth. Punk definitely seemed like the aggressor in that footage. Now, there was no sound on that footage. It's a UK-based CCTV. I don't believe we're allowed to record audio for certain things. I don't remember. I did know a little bit about this at one point, but they don't, you know, there was no sound. So you can't be sure that, like, you know, something wasn't said to elicit that reaction. That being said, that reaction was wrong. Like, CM Punk deserved to be fired, don't get me wrong. But showing that footage was not the big win that you think it was. Like, you showed that footage, and then people in the audience were chanting CM Punk. Now, they did get they did get booed at, they did get stopped. There were boos to stop that. But it didn't come across well. It comes across like you've had your feelings hurt, or it's gotten to you in some way. So you're like, oh, fine. Now, if you want to release the footage, fine. Obviously, you can't give it to the MMA Hour, and you can't give it to Pat McAfee, but you can give it to Dave Meltzer. You know, you can give it to... That's how you get this stuff out without totally derailing your program. Because what they've tried to do is use that footage to create a in storyline reason for another match, the FTR versus Young Bucks match, and it's really, really weird, because I don't think they realised that people weren't going to be like, oh, Punk's an asshole, screw him. I think they thought that was going to happen, because otherwise, why do you show the footage? If you wanted to show this footage, you send it to Meltzer, like, the week after it happens, and you let people get over it. All this has done is taken part of your audience, or part of your build, and mired it back down in something you have no control over. Because you believe you are using it to build the Young Bucks versus FTR, which is already going to be a great match. And I don't often say this, but fair play to the Young Bucks for trying to give a kayfabe reason for this happening. You know, fair play to them for that. But I was on board with AEW that they'd kind of recovered from all this, and it's taken a long time for them to shake all that off and be like, yeah, whatever, Punk's gone, but we've got Will Ospreay, and we've got Mercedes Moné, and we've got Adam Copeland, and we've got, you know, there was enough positive buzz going around that you were like, okay, this Punk thing happened, but it's done now, it's over. But this footage does not build FTR versus the Young Bucks. This footage builds Jack Perry versus CM Punk, a match you can't give people. And if I'm totally honest, aside from the fact that Punk struck first, Punk was pretty truthful about what happened in that footage. You know, it would have been one thing if it had come out and it had just been a crazy, over-the-top, absolute mauling. But, you know, it's really weird. It's just... like, it's just... don't do it. And on that week, when you show that footage, in hopes to get more people to view your product, and keep in mind that TV rights negotiations are coming up, and they are slowly losing viewers. They've got some of the best wrestlers in the world. So what do they have those wrestlers do? Do you bring over Okada and put him in the ring? No. Like, you don't have him do an interesting, cool heel interview with the Bucks. Do you have Ospreay come out and do anything cool. No, he comes out and takes pot shots at Triple H about how Triple H only got where he got because of who he was in a relationship with, which has been a line people have used for 20 years. It's not new. It's not engaging. It's just, please look at me. Look at me. Get your eyes over here. Isn't that cool what he said? It's like, no, man. If you're going to put that footage on there and you thought people were going to turn up, then you needed to load that card with basically a pay-per-view. You need to put on the best matches because that's what you've got. You've got people, you've got wrestlers who people consider better than most WWE wrestlers. It's a weird one. We got Fran the Cannon. Ospreay's was more warranted, in my opinion. Triple H was clearly alluding to him, and it's clapped back in response, and done, then I'm fine. If it's repeated, then I have an issue. To me, not mentioning it at all is, like, the cooler thing to do. It's just, if you don't have Ospreay mention it, and you just put Ospreay in a match, and then you have, like, the you had the commentators talk about, Will Ospreay has been grinding his way out in Japan and stuff like, and you have them kind of make reference to it without directly talking about it. It doesn't come across quite so bad. And I like AEW. I think AEW do some good stuff, but there's been conflicting reports, and there's a reason I didn't put any of this in the news. It's because I want to talk about it here. There's been conflicting reports about, you know, FTR didn't want to do this. The Bucks didn't want to do this. The Bucks wanted to do this and FTR wanted to do this. They both didn't want to do it. Tony Khan pushed it through. Like, we don't know what happened, but it doesn't matter. You were away from it. I mean, you've got a pay-per-view in just over, you know, you've got a pay-per-view soon. 7 days, 8 days for a dynasty. It's a weird one. I'm beginning to think Mercedes, my name, must still be hurt because she has not been in the ring, and she's talking about, she's not talking about Dynasty for a match. But you needed to put on that show, matches where people went, wow, I don't care about this stupid CM Punk thing. That was dumb. But did you see that match between so-and-so and so-and-so? It's next Sunday. It's next Sunday, Dynasty. And they've got some great matches on there. I'm looking forward to Ospreay versus Danielson is obviously the reason I already bought the card. But it's just, it's embarrassing because you don't need it, especially when you're second. Like, when you're first, you can kind of, or when you're close to first, you can kind of throw some barbs. When you're second, it comes across as desperate, and that's not something AEW did. But the gap has widened for them a little bit. They should have ignored the punk interview, and it would have gone away. Now it's not going to, because the next time Punk has an interview, you can be guaranteed someone to be like, so what did you think about them airing that footage? I'd like to point out it's a UK piece of footage. It originated in the UK. And there is also a thing in the UK where you're not allowed to use CCTV footage for anything less than its intended purpose. So, it's a weird one. Because I think the Dynasty is going to be great. I really do. I think that Dynasty is going to be a good show. I think the wrestling in AEW is fine. It's just you've got to get away from all this stuff. You've got to create compelling storylines. You can't keep appealing to this internet crowd. Like, can you imagine if you weren't up on the internet? If you just weren't a smart fan and you were watching AEW. I mean, it's the most accessible show in the UK right now. It's on ITV, right? And And like you tune in and they're like, we're going to show you some footage. And you're like, okay, so what? It leads you nowhere. Like, Punk is going to turn back up on AEW TV to start something. And say what you will, like, the Young Bucks was... They said some funny stuff, like, oh, we couldn't prepare for our match because we had to let wrestling journalists know what was going on. That's amusing. But, like, I'm fed up of this smarky rubbish. Like, I'm as smart as a wrestling fan can be without being in the business. Like, I'm not going to say I know how everything works, but I keep my ear on the ground. I tend to try and find out what's going on. But even before they aired this footage, there wasn't a single person that I knew that was going to be like tuning in for this footage. Most people were like, this is a bad idea. But they'd already advertised it, so you had to do it. So we've got, like, just look at the beatdown of Pac and Okada. CM Punk chants, 10 years of WWE fans doing it for fun whilst bored. Now it's AEW's problem, and it's likely going to go forward. Exactly. It's just like, you've created a rod for your own fans to beat you with. To my mind, did CM Punk have to go? Yeah. Was it a mistake for CM Punk to go? Yeah. Was some of what CM Punk said in that interview, like, justified? Yeah. Because after Brawl, there are two of them now. There's Brawl Out and Brawl In. Whichever one was the first one, so it's Brawl Out. Once that had happened, you turn around and you say, right, as the boss, you turn around and you go, everyone's getting in this room tomorrow. I don't care where you are. I don't care what you're doing. We are squashing this because this cannot happen again. Right? And you're going to have to work together. People now want to see this match. You've created this problem for yourself and you work for me. That didn't happen. You know, they just look at the original Punk interview where Punk just goes off on one and Tony just sits there like, it's just, what are you doing? It's your company. You are the boss. These people, they work for you. I don't care if you're their fan, if you're their friend, you can't be that close to them. You can't have favourites. They've got to sit down and do as they're told at a certain point, because otherwise, as TNA showed us, if you are too friendly with people, they will take advantage of you. It's ridiculous. I cannot understand how that original prop... And I know bringing this back up is weird for me to do, but it all stems from that. The inability to squash that original heat, to force it, because you can't be like, oh, I'm arranging a meeting if you want it. No, not if you want it. You do it, or I'll get rid of everyone involved, or anyone that doesn't turn up. I tell you what, guy, I do have more respect for. It was on, he's been doing some streaming lately, and he talked about it. It was Kenny Omega. He said, yeah, my major problem was getting Larry out of there. I thought that was, you know, so I got Larry out of there. And I do think that, you know, sometimes you get into a fight and you get all the aggression out and then you work together. And, you know, I'm not really an EVP. I was terrible at it. So, and me and Punk, we have some respect for each other, because there were reports that Kenny got Larry out, and then afterwards, like, Punk and Kenny were like, oh, that was terrible, and they were like, yeah, and that was it. Like, they seemed like they were the most cool with each other, but you cannot sit there with your talent and act like they'll sort it out. They won't. Wrestling, being a professional wrestler, requires you to have a huge ego. It just does. The best wrestlers have had huge egos. Austin turned around and went, I'm not doing that with Brock because we can use that for a pay-per-view. And he left the company. You know what I mean? And that was all handled poorly, but at least eventually it was handled. The fact that this was let go until the next show, until one of the Buck's best friends was able to poke the bear a little more. It's just a bad look. And I'm hoping that, you know, this entire thing has taught Tony a thing or two of like, I've either got to take the reins more and put my foot down, or I've got to put people in place who will put their foot down. As bad as it was last week, you know, I think the firings could be a sign of them taking it more seriously as a business rather than a toy box. And again, this is sounding like I'm like really digging in on AEW. I still think the in-ring product in AEW is very good. I think they could use some work on the storylines every now and then. But there are people in AEW who I do not think want to be there. They're pretty big names, so you're keeping them. Fair enough. But you've got to sit there and be like, who are my main people? What's going on? And settle on stuff and go for it. Because you've had people like nearly get over, like Wardlow. He beats MJF, and like it's like you go, oh, he's over now, and you stop using him for months. It's massively frustrating. Like Bryan Danielson apparently doesn't want to be world champion. Fair enough, but you know what would look good for your company, for at least a little run, having Bryan Danielson as your champion. Because in the history books, that's a nice lineage. I know that's a small thing, but to me, you could be like, I come in, win the belt, and lose it to Ospreay in a month or whatever. And you'll get in there with Swerve Strickland. He's ready, all right? But you've got to pull the trigger soon. You can't keep... It's just little niggling problems of bothering me. It's just like it's just bothering me, because it's like you were there, you were out of the mire of this whole Punk situation, and you dragged it back in because you couldn't face the idea that someone else had the last word. So anyway, I'll go back to the chat, because I've been having a nice little rant there, and so we've got. Mr. Priceless. I think Mercedes is not wrestling, it's Double or Nothing, it seems. Being on the roster a few months, doing nothing. AEW fans will counter with Jade and WWE so far. That's right. Eddie Hickey. They just don't know when to give up. Fran the Cannon. Both Jade and Monet hold no interest for me. Mr. Priceless. Petty pot shots. Why? It's a massive own goal. Eddie Hickey, AEW is going to have to do something huge to fix this mistake. Fran the Cannon, what's next? Brawl for All In, All Out, Shake It All About, well done. I should have read that entire sentence before. it's just a, like, I don't want, I'm not one of these people that hates AEW and loves WWE, or loves WWE and hates AEW. I hope that I try and give as unbiased an opinion as I can. I try not to be a tribalist. But right now, WWE are doing really well. And people are saying, well, you know, because WWE are doing well, of course AEW are doing badly. That has been a defence of the situation. You've only got to look back to the Monday Night Wars, where both companies were doing very, very well, to know that's not how things go. My main thing is that This wasn't forced on them by WWE. This wasn't forced on them by a network. Somewhere in that company, and I believe it's Tony Khan, someone in that company thought this was going to be a great idea. And I can't understand the thought process behind that. Very, very strange to see here and think about. We've got Dynasty in a week, and I'm like, should be cool. You know, it should be good, but I'm not really thinking about it right now. I mean, I've ordered it because I ordered the Fight Pass three pay per view thing. But I'm like, okay, I want to see Danielson Ospreay. That's really what I want to see, and I do want to see the Strickland Samoa Joe match. But I'm not focused on the storylines because this CCTV own goal has really taken me out of AEW for a bit. Like, I've got to go back and re-watch Collision because I had it on in the background. I was just kind of... Maybe that's because of Mania. But I wasn't as tuned in as I should be. You know, there was a time where I wouldn't miss a live show for AEW. It just like, but it's just turned into like, I've got to be right with the company. I've got to think investing my time isn't going to result in me being mad. It's very weird for me. And we've got Mr. Price says, any criticism is creative criticism or logic and or sense. Thanks very much, because I do often, I'm assuming this is about me, I do often worry that I'm like having a total go at one of the companies and then praising the other one far too much. Fran the Cannon, if both are smart, then both can be great. Why can't we have that? That's it, Mr. Priceless. Tony Khan chose violence to commit on WWE's weekend. Always wanted to steal some thunder when WWE does a good thing. TK will pay for his crimes. To me, he's already paid for his crimes because, like, he's made the entire company look kind of petty. I'll be honest with you, when Triple H made that comment about the grind, I was like, yeah, I didn't really need to do that, man. Like, that's, like, because I was coming down on the whole, like, so what you're saying, because think about this, that Triple H comment about, like, if they don't want the grind, I don't really want them. So what you're saying is, unless they want to break their body for you, you don't care that they can make more money somewhere else. It's basically saying we're still going to treat you like animals. You're here to just work until you drop. If you take it in the most roundabout way that you can, that's a bad thing for you to say. I took it as like, oh, that's not a good look for WWE. And then when you have Ospreay come out and be like, yeah, but you only got where you get in because you slept with the boss's daughter. It's just playground name calling where you could have taken the higher road and not said anything. And everyone go like, well, Triple H is a bit of a sod, isn't he? I'm hoping that Dynasty wipes away the taste of this AEW promotional tactic. But there have been several pay-per-views where I've said stuff like that. Oh, I hope this show takes away from, you know, the brawl in and brawl out situations. I hope that this takes away from the devil storyline going on forever and being crap. It constantly seems like the in-ring product has to rescue the company from backstage bullshit. Which is why, as I say, you've really got to sit there and think that you've got to have someone in charge that says, enough of this, I'm the boss. Which is one of the things, to be fair to CM Punk, that he was saying, look, he's a nice guy, he's not a boss. And you can't really argue with that. Which is frustrating. Like, I don't, like, Tony seems like a cool guy, like a good guy, but you never hear, like, oh, this is happening because this is the one thing you hear that is happening because Tony wants it. You know, usually it's like, oh, so-and-so's creative's up to so-and-so, which... So if this is the kind of thing Tony wants to do, then maybe you don't want him in total charge. But I guess we shall see. I'm hoping that this time next week, I'll be here quite well. I'll be here running down Dynasty and the card and stuff, and this week's TV will have picked up and made me go, oh, okay, I'm really looking forward to Dynasty. Or, and that, you know, that'll be good. We shall see what happens with this week's TV. Eddie Hickey, Tony is like a young Vince. I certainly hope not. If I find that out years from now, I won't be very happy. But it's weird. So what do you guys think? Am I on the right path here? Am I on the right to be like annoyed at this situation, or does anybody in this chat room feel this was a good idea? Because I can't see a single like upside to it. It's a very strange thing. So, like Mr. Priceless, well, if a certain scapegoat returns and Cry Me a River, more ammo to Punk, and to even a degree, Drew's cerebral streak, just look at Drew's Wars versus Priest on Raw, nods to Twitter. That's true. Like, if they can use this to get Jack Perry over, I guess that's something. But, like, I don't buy it, man. Like, Jack Perry's like, I liked his heel character before this whole scapegoat thing. I thought that was coming across really well. Getting rid of the theme music and replacing it with classical music and stuff. I thought that was a good character. Fran the Cannon. I think it was a major error. Not sure why Perry's shirts are selling in AEW and New Japan right now either. Well, I think that's really clear. Fran, it's Fox CM Punk. That's why his stuff's selling. The moment people forget this Punk thing, Jack Perry will suffer for it because suddenly he's in massive... he's viewed by that subset of fans as a big underdog, as like, oh, he got beaten up and basically punished for it. So we're going to support him and fuck CM Punk because he's not with AEW anymore and he downplayed AEW. It's tribalism. Mr. Priceless, shoot from the hip, desperation, massive own goal by TK. Punk was right. I mean, and Drew mentioned that Twitter trend of Damian Priest, bloody perfect. Like, it's a very weird, it's a weird situation because they have tried to turn it into a storyline, but I just wish they'd left it alone. The storyline should have been whoever wins this match is going to be tag team champions. It's weird, like to bring this real life stuff in. I hesitate to use the words WCW 2000, and it isn't that bad. People are saying it's that bad. I will say to those people, you probably didn't live through WCW 2000, or if you did, you haven't seen it recently, because that stuff was just bad. It was the company stopped caring. There was like interviews would stop, but the camera wouldn't stop recording. There was the infamous match where the commentary team were like, wait, that was supposed to be the finish, but he wouldn't go up for the powerbomb. He's going into business for himself as a storyline thing. Fran the Cannon, Shivani's reaction, though, poor guy. Yeah, he must be getting WCW flashbacks of like, oh, God, we're going into this worked shoot thing, because he said on his podcast what happened when that he was just over it. He just wanted to move on. And that's where I was done. Like, do I like Punk? Yeah. Can I sort of see Punk's point of view if he didn't feel like things were being handled in a professional manner? Yep. Right. I can understand the point of view. Do I agree with him fighting people? No, he should have been fired for that. Right? He should have. But there was no winning this. People have made their mind up about that weeks ago. Fran the Cannon, he literally had an arm flashbacks. I do feel bad for Tony, because Tony was having fun. And the more Tony's got actually involved with the company, the less fun I think he's having. Because at one point, I'll be honest with you, at one point, as much as I loved his commentary, I don't think he knew what was going on. I honestly don't. And I'm talking like the first like year he was in. I think he was just happy to be there. And a lot of his stuff was just... It was not as bad as WCW 2000. That was trending, you are right. But, like, WCW 2000 is... It was imagine having something worse than the CCTV footage every week, or every show, because there were two shows a week. It was bad. Funny to look back on. Like, I'm sure at one point a guy in a bumblebee costume attacked someone, and it was just never mentioned again. There was tons of stuff like that. Where it was, oh, we'll do this, and then nothing happened. We'll do a 30-person world title tournament, and I think nearly all of the matches had ruins. Mr. Price says, I think Tony is missing Sting! You're right there. I think I am too. Like I said, I just want them to dig their way out of it. They can. They can put on a couple of great shows this week, and I'll be like, yep, no problem. But they cannot double down on this, because somebody will ask Punk about this next time he's interviewed, and he'll talk, because he can talk. He's good at it. He's got people on his side who will listen to him. But if that happens, they cannot then go, well, then we're going to talk about this. You can't do it. It's a very strange time in wrestling, because I'm very positive on both companies. I really am positive on AEW. It's just they cannot go down this avenue more. This has to be the end of it. Whether or not WWE say more, you just got to rise above it. And I know some people out there will be like, oh, they look weak for not saying anything. Yeah, but when your replies are going to be stuff that you can't back up, then you're in trouble. So that has been me talking for 2 hours about WrestleMania, about Monday Night Raw, about SmackDown, about the AEW situation, and I've dropped a couple of small news pieces. I'm very grateful that you guys have all hung out with me in the chat. But I think that's going to have to be me for the week. I will see you this time next week to talk about the build-up for... thanks very much, Eddie. You do a whole day of me streaming. Unfortunately, sooner or later, I run out of stuff to say. Sooner or later, I just... I don't just want to keep repeating myself. I try not to do it so much, but obviously, like today with the AEW stuff, I know I've repeated myself a fair bit. It's because I'm so frustrated. But thank you very much. It's very kind of you. But yeah, this has been a pretty packed show. I'm going to turn up next weekend, next Sunday, before the pay-per-view to give you a rundown of the card. And I'll be telling you what I thought of the week's TV. And obviously, if anything big happens in the world of wrestling, I will let you guys know all about it. Thank you so much, and I'll see you next time.